Hey, it's me, James Stacey, and today I've got Jack and John on the show to chat about the return of the watch industry trade show and then a consideration of how we define an integrated bracelet. With Watches and Wonders a little more than a month away, we wanted to set the stage for what looks to be the new big show on the calendar. And after that, following a recent pair of point-counterpoint stories published to the site late last week, we've got a loose and somewhat ponderous chat about watch bracelets and why we call some of them integrated. As you might expect, things get a bit nerdy. Jack, John, welcome back to the show. I think this is going to be a fun one. We've got a few things to talk about. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, James.
Doing absolutely outstanding. I'm coming to you live from a temporary apartment that my family had to move into on very short notice so that the management team and my apartment complex could repair water damage to our ceiling. But I promise you it will not affect the quality of my work.
You're a consummate professional, even when the ceiling is literally crumbling above you.
that's right.
And you know what? I've always said that about you, Jack. You know, I appreciate both of you being on the show, of course. And yeah, I think the first thing I want to talk about is I've been getting messages from people asking, like, what are you guys doing for Baselworld? What are you doing for SIHH? And I feel like we might want to kick off, because we're like a little over a month away from this becoming our new reality, the new Watches and Wonders in Geneva. But I think that a lot of people over the course of the pandemic kind of lost track of the trade show. I think the Watches and Wonder people have done a really good job, but they kind of rebranded in some ways from SIHH, and there's different locations and each location has its own sort of thing. But the big show, the big show literally is coming up at the end of March. And I wanted to kick off our conversation there to just try and fill people in on what the show has become, the fact that there isn't really a Baselworld that matters to our kind of content flow anymore, and kind of what people should expect come the end of March, because it's going to be a proper trade show, right, John?
Yeah, it is going to be a proper trade show. And so what we have is a show in which, you know, the constituent brands of what was the SIHH, a long running, you know, invitation only show put on by the HH, or the FHH, I should say, with many brands from the Richemont Group participating, has become the heavy hitting show. So Baselworld no longer exists. You know, some of the premier brands that one would have expected to see at Baselworld, I'm talking about brands like Patek, Rolex, Tudor, and then also, you know, Chanel on a more of a fashion side, are in Geneva now, and they're showing at Watches and Wonders. So this is really the big show for us. This is close to 40 brands. This is, you know, this is definitely going to be like our Super Bowl, I would say, this year in terms of a trade show.
I mean, if somebody had told me even 3 years ago, hey, you know, 3 years from now, Baselworld will not exist anymore in any way, shape, or form, and Rolex and Patek Philippe are going to be showing at the next generation of SIHH, I would have bet real money against it. I mean, it's wild.
Yeah, I thought Baselworld would have gone on forever. It seemed like, you know, the kind of like North Star of the watch industry in its annual releases. But that North Star has shifted from Basel to Geneva, it seems.
Well, I mean, even the position of the actual North Star shifts over a 28,000 year period. So, you know, sooner or later.
Well, we had a fast shift in the last couple of years. It really has kind of been, speaking of shifting, there, like the sort of tectonic plates of the big promotional wing of the Swiss watch industry have really been kind of crashing and causing earthquakes and ripples and shockwaves throughout the whole thing. But the end result is March 30th to about April 5th. And in many ways, I would say if you need a context for it, it's going to be fairly like a new take on SIHH, essentially. You know, it's at PAL Expo, but there's going to be other people kind of showing off stuff in the periphery around Geneva. So this is kind of going to be the main focus for 2022. You never really know whether Baselworld could one day make some sort of triumphant return. But it's not a great sign, right, that Rolex and Patek have essentially now committed to being operators within. That it'd be hard to go back and forth, like to see that sort of musical chairs have them go to the other side, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that one very interesting thing is that the Swiss watch industry in 2021, it had its best year commercially ever. For as long as they've been keeping records, the highest number for value of exported watches ever. So that's an incredible thing. And that happened in the complete absence of trade shows. So the whole urgency about showing at Baselworld historically was that You know, brands would go there, retailers would go there, and they would sign their order books for the year. And then the brands knew exactly how many watches they were supposed to produce for a given year because the orders were already in. And, you know, you kind of had to be there in order to do business at all. But, you know, when an entire industry has its best year ever without any trade shows, you know, you start to realize that perhaps what trade shows are going to be about moving forward is it's really almost entirely a PR activation and not a commercial activation anymore.
So the other interesting thing is one of the main parties that kind of started the death knell of Baselworld, the Swatch Group, and especially Omega, who's always been kind of front and center in Hall 1. They're not going to be at Watches and Wonders 2022. They're continuing to do their own thing, which I think they started in 19, if I remember correctly. It might even have been 18, but I think 18 was their last year at Baselworld. And it's interesting to see that they're going to continue on that path, even when you have brands, like we said, Rolex and Patek making the choice. And back in the day, the big holdouts from an indie side, I believe, would have been Rolex, Patek, Chopard. But when Omega left, I guess that was enough to, kind of suggest where things were headed.
Yeah, it was Omega and all of the Swatch Group. And in fact, you know, some of the higher end brands, the Breguets and the Blancpains of the Swatch Group will in fact be showing novelties, new watches at their Geneva boutiques. So they will be participating this week. Well, you know, what we're seeing is a real return of what, you know, we in the industry used to call the Geneva Watch Week, where we would have, you know, SIHH, a now defunct, but once quite popular show of independence called the GTE, and all these other kind of events happening around the same time, including the independence that would show in hotel rooms along the quay. What we're seeing developing, and it's literally happening like by the day. I was wondering about some independence today on the day we were recording, whether they'd be showing or not. And I got an email from several of these brands saying, come see us in Hotel X or Hotel Y. So it's really going to be quite a big thing.
It'll be an interesting thing to try and cover this year, right? Because it's there's a lot of newness to it, but it's more just that we're like 2 years out of practice.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of like the Super Bowl or the Olympics. Like whatever you do for the year, however well you ride or how fast you ride or the perspectives you develop on given markets and brands or you know, maybe photography, all that sorts of thing. It's all kind of, at least in my 6-7 years of going to Basel, it was always to be better the next year you went to Basel, to be 30 minutes faster writing a story or a little bit better with photos or a little bit more ready to do something that, say, one of the other outlets wasn't doing, be it video or otherwise, or podcasting or whatever.
I mean, the great thing about being a regular several years running at both Baselworld and SIHH was that pretty much everything was in the same place from 1 year to the next. So you didn't really have to think too much about, going from point A to point B to point C. And, you know, just to set the stage for, I think probably most of the folks listening are not familiar with the actual physical setup for the SIHH. And, so there's this gigantic exhibition hall large enough to hold several 747s right across the highway from the Geneva airport called the Pell Expo Center. That's where the main show is this year. But there are also a bunch of sort of sub shows taking place, about halfway from Geneva to the airport. There's going to be another smaller show of largely independent brands. There's going to be another show of independent watchmakers, you know, as distinguished from independent brands. As John mentioned, several Swatch Group brands are showing new pieces at their boutiques in Geneva. And then there's going to be a lot of other brands. Well, I actually don't know how many, but at least a dozen posting up in different hotel rooms. We're inviting you to their workshops in and around Geneva. Yeah, it's going to be a whole new ballgame. Involves a lot of running around.
I don't necessarily envy some of the members of the team that haven't done a trade show before and jumping into one where so many parties will be kind of operating, not in a solo aspect, but without understanding the way that their actions might cascade into others, whether it be length of meetings or it's a new layout for the hall. So the fact that I used to be able to know where Richard Mille was in relation to Piaget, that's gone now. Like that knowledge is useless.
Oh, I freaked out when I saw the map. I was like, they moved the entrance?
Yeah, it's like hitting a new dungeon in Zelda. And you're just kind of like, oh my goodness, this is going to take a while for sure. Yeah. This is going to be a while before I know where I am, right?
Well, John is managing our appointment schedule. So, I mean, he has ongoing daily intimate experience of trying to, make this whole you know, freaking Tetris puzzle work.
Yeah. I mean, we're really fortunate in that we have a large contingent of editors heading over. So we will be able to apply, I think, a divide and conquer strategy to the show. But it's always tricky to make sure that, like, you know, when you want to go from one key brand that you're very interested in seeing to another, that you're able to make it and not lose time in getting there. And then also have, you know, the right people with cameras on location to take photographs.
The other one that I'm really concerned about, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one, but it's a serious thing that I'm like legitimately, I'm losing sleep over it, is I'm worried that they're not going to have the Carpaccio at the lunch tables. you don't always get to, when you're in a different country, you don't always kind of get food that allows you to continue working, if that makes any sense. And the fact that I could sit down and have like an arugula salad and some protein and keep moving, it didn't take a long time. They were very organized and the food was good. Of course, I'm kidding. I don't care what they feed me. I'll eat protein bars. It doesn't matter. But it is something that in my mind, I was like, are they going to change the menu? Because a couple pieces of sushi and some carpaccio really kept me going.
You can have a surprisingly subjectively grubby experience in a luxury setting. And, you know, there's something about snatching a slightly soggy sandwich that's been sitting out on a plate for 2 hours as you go to your next meeting to look at a bunch of $35,000 watches that, it's an interesting contrast. And every single person who just heard me say that is listening just said to themselves, first world problems. It is 2022.
To be clear, we're literally kidding. They can feed us, give me a big Toblerone when I get to the airport and I'll work my way through it.
Chocolate and espresso.
like a Tolkien character. I'll wrap it up in a piece of paper and keep going. I'm excited for the show. I really am. I would say I'm also very anxious about how everything will come together, but thankfully, like Jack said, we've got John at the helm. So we're in good hands. I don't think we'll get lost, that sort of thing. Hopefully the travel, I think that's kind of the biggest wonder for me, is that everybody's kind of flights work out. I'm thrilled. I'm already thinking about what gear I'm supposed to be bringing. And
then there's always the question of which prescription drugs to bring with you. I mean, I personally recommend a suite of benzodiazepines, non-narcotic sleep aids.
Sure.
and ibuprofen.
A small pharmacy. Yeah, that's what's required. I always like to rely on certain fermented goods and no small quantity of street meat if possible. All right. So I think that's probably enough for, you know, trade show stuff. Obviously, watch this space. I don't know what we're going to be doing for podcasting at the show yet, but I'd like to do something or some sort of like mega shows that have every editor on them. And it's just a complete mess kind of downloading our experiences afterward, but we'll find a solution and there'll be tons on the site. Be sure to, you know, follow all the social stuff because that's where the fast stuff will come out. And we'll have more updates as to how best to interface with that content as we get closer to the show, I'm sure. Beyond that, you know, there's another topic that I've got on the list for today. And one of the main reasons I asked you two to be on the show is you guys have produced a kind of one of our signature series is this point counterpoint where editors take either side of an argument and kind of share their perspective. And it's an argument or a point of argument that I feel very strongly about, which is bracelets in general, but certainly whether you're better off with an integrated design or something a little bit more general. And I think this could go either way. I think there's perspectives on both sides that make a lot of sense. I'll leave it to you guys. Give me the bullet points of your positions, if you will.
So the way we kind of framed it was there's two possible definitions. So we've all heard the term integrated bracelet. Everybody uses the term integrated bracelet, but nobody seems to use it in exactly the same way. So John and I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do a point counterpoint where I, for the sake of argument, take the position that integrated bracelet just means a bracelet that has been designed specifically to fit and enhance the aesthetics of a watch. And John takes the narrower position, which is definitely a position that some people adhere to. And we know because we've both heard about it from people in the comments, where integrated bracelet means a bracelet that is not only an aesthetic and engineering match to the watch, but which is also difficult in the extreme to dislodge from its position. So like it's not an aftermarket modification friendly design. Is that that about right, John?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's to me, it's the watches that come probably immediately to mind. Like, you know, a Royal Oak is going to have a bracelet that is only going to fit on a Royal Oak. I'm sure there are aftermarket solutions that you could find out there for it. But, you know, as most people understand that watch, it is a specific bracelet that it was designed by AP to fit onto that case. You know, end of story. It is a narrow position, I think, to take. But I think it's, I mean, I think, I frankly think it's probably the more popular one. I could be wrong, but that's certainly the way that I've always viewed it.
I mean, I think you're probably right. Of course, you know, we're recording this before the stories go live. So we're certainly going to know what the consensus horologium is from the comments by the time this article goes live. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, for terms to mean anything, they have to be as rigorously defined as possible. Now, I mean, normally, I'm on the side of narrow prescriptivism when it comes to definitions. But a good place to start the conversation is the Royal Oak, because in fact, that is like, I mean, that and the Nautilus are probably the classic examples of what constitutes an integrated bracelet watch.
If you were to take a position any different from the one that I'm taking, essentially all bracelets then would be integrated, right? It's that or they don't fit, you know?
But what if you used an example like the Omega No Time to Die LE? Is a titanium 41 millimeter Seamaster with a titanium mesh bracelet, but it's not fitted end links. You could take that bracelet off and put it on not only any other Seamaster, but on any watch with a 20 millimeter lug width.
Not integrated, I don't think.
Yeah, not in my mind either. But then what if you take it a step further and you say a solid end link bracelet from a sub, right? That's only going to fit a sub conceivably or a watch with a very similar case, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point that you raise, but I think it's really, you know, you could also find a strap that would not be, you know, made by the company that wouldn't have to have that kind of end-link structure to fit right in there. No problem.
Absolutely.
In the same way that, like, you know, with a, you know, it's hard to make a President bracelet fit onto like a GMT Master or something like that. But like the strap solution, if you want to go that route, is very easy.
Would be the same. Yeah, I see what you mean. I think the Royal Oak is a great option because it doesn't use a conventional lug shape. So you either have that bracelet or you have something that mimics that bracelet. You can't just buy a strap.
Right.
Maybe we need a third category to sort of deal with like
semi-integrated.
The cases that Rolex presents, which is like semi-integrated, somewhat generic looking bracelets that have specifically been designed to be extremely frustrating, if not impossible to remove.
And you know, I think you could make the case that Rolex might believe that their bracelets are integrated bracelets, in that I don't think they assume most people would buy a sub on a bracelet and then ever take it off the bracelet.
But so here's the thing. Nobody ever to my knowledge has ever said, despite the fact that you could, you know, make a kind of a plausible argument for it, nobody has ever called a Submariner bracelet an integrated bracelet, and nobody ever calls a sub an integrated bracelet watch. So, and if we contrast that with a Royal Oak, I mean, it turns out that it's actually not that hard to take the bracelet off a Royal Oak. It's held on by screws that go into a threaded bar that runs through the part of the bracelet that's closest to the watch. So if you can use a screwdriver and you exercise like basic precautions, like throwing some scotch tape over the screw hole, you can literally have the bracelet off a Royal Oak in like less than 5 minutes. And then there's like, and it turns out, and you know, like I said in the article, I'm not going to curry any favor with AP by saying this probably, but it turns out that there's a ton of aftermarket straps. I don't know about bracelets, but a ton of aftermarket straps for the Royal Oak. And it also turns out that, I mean, and obviously the AP makes straps for different model Royal Oaks as well, which are delivered with OEM, you know, leather straps. So it gets a little fuzzy, right? Like, okay, so does it have to do with like being impossible to remove? Does it have to do with being frustrating to remove? Does it have to do with like aesthetics? I mean,
I'm sorry, when you say that there are aftermarket solutions, is that, are those things that work somehow into the provided end links or the end links that you would have from a pre-existing AP strap? Or is this like an end link solution that makes it, that goes onto the case?
So it's the non-OEM straps basically work the same way that the OEM straps do. They fit into that, you know, smaller interlug space, and then you just run the bar through.
If what you're doing is so, is such a kind of iconic watch as the Royal Oak, I guess it pays to make something aftermarket for it. But by and large, I mean, I haven't seen those things, you know. I guess I'd have to look.
I had never actually seen how easy it was. I'm going to admit this, you know, straight up. I mean, it had just never occurred to me that anyone would even want to put a non-OEM strap on a Royal Oak. I wasn't aware until we started working on this point counterpoint that it was as easy as it is to take the bracelet off a Royal Oak, because it's like trivially easy to take the bracelet off a Royal Oak.
In my world, I don't think that the difficulty of removing the strap comes into this statement at all. Because if you look at something like an Overseas, the current Overseas line from Vacheron is all quick connect, but it's definitely integrated. So those come off in seconds.
Right.
but they have a weird lug shape. The other one to keep in mind would be like an Oris Aquis. So it's not just very expensive watches. Something like an Aquis, you can't just put a standard strap on. And in my world, I would see the difference, the simple difference between integrated and whatever you would call the other option is not whether or not you can remove the strap easily, but when it's gone, can I put a NATO on it? Can I put a normal 20mm strap on it, right?
Yeah, that's how I feel.
I was going to say, is the defining diagnostic test the NATO test?
Will it take a NATO? If not, you have yourself an integrated bracelet watch.
See, this is again, it's very, very hard to find a hard and fast dividing line, right? Like, okay, you can put a NATO on it, but do you have to use a slightly smaller NATO? Does it start looking awkward? At what point is it too awkward for it to be like, you know, for the NATO test to be a useful, you know, diagnostic? I mean,
right.
I mean, you know, where I really ended up landing with this was kind of looking at how the word is actually used. And it tends to be used for watches where there's sort of an emphasis on aesthetics, an emphasis on design. And the bracelet is really is intended to explicitly be a continuation of and a further expression of the aesthetic that informed the case design. That's really the best that I could come up with.
Yeah. Had I been assigned to this, I think I would make the argument. I'm actually not sure which side, whose argument I'd be picking up on, because it's nuanced. It's a simple thing, but it's just a question of like, is the watch such that it's meant to kind of use the one bracelet, or is it such that you could take it off? Like I don't think a Rolex, as closely integrated as a Rolex bracelet is to a modern Rolex case, which is very, the tolerances are remarkable, even from normal bracelet standards on almost any price point. But you could take that bracelet off, and then conceivably, if I have a Rolex sport watch of similar interlug measurement, I could take that bracelet and put it on that watch too. So you could, you know, people did this. They took the Jubilee off of one and put it on another. And as long as the, you know, the distance matched, it lined up because the case shapes were uniform. I guess you could almost make the case, well, yeah, but if you took the bracelet off your gold Royal Oak, you could put it on your steel Royal Oak. You know, if you just wanted to watch the world burn, really. But I feel like I'm talking myself out of this own argument. In my mind, it's so clear, but as soon as you start talking about it, it's more complicated, right? Is the bracelet hyper specific to that case, or is there something kind of universal about the lug shape?
So, I mean, one of the things that I ended up feeling pretty strongly was that if you just isolate the question of, can you easily change the bracelet for a strap, that doesn't really, you know, hold up the longer that you look at it. Because, I mean, like the modern Cartier Santos Dumont, you know, just to pick one example, the Vacheron Overseas is another. Both of those have quick change strap systems. And it's like, you can change the strap for bracelet and back, you know, in a second. And I don't think there are any non-OEM solutions to those two watches in terms of making straps, non-OEM straps, that would work with a quick change system. But the quick change system isn't like, you know, it's not the Large Hadron Collider. It's not this like unreproducible piece of engineering. And if there's one thing that I kind of learned from, you know, researching the story and looking at all of these different cases, you know, what man can make, man can imitate. And especially if it's something as relatively straightforward as a quick change strap system, that can be imitated too. So, I mean, if somebody out there, especially nowadays when you can, you know, when it's incredibly, incredibly easy to machine steel parts, you know, if you wanted to, if I don't know why anybody would want to, but if you wanted to make a non-OEM bracelet or strap solution for an Overseas or for a Santos Dumont, I suspect that you probably could, and I suspect it would not be that hard considering how easily high fidelity fakes of entire watches are these days.
Well, and especially there's always these cottage industries that spring up when a brand doesn't fulfill something people want.
Oh, so 100%.
Let's go back to Rolex, and they won't sell you. You can't buy a steel Daytona and then go back to the AD and go, well, yeah, I'll pay you the $2,000 or whatever for an Oyster Flex. You had to buy the watch that came with the Oyster Flex, which means it didn't come with the bracelet, right? But then you have Everest and Rubber B and all these other brands on the periphery that do the work and do the measurement and make these really high-end FKM, you know, rubber straps that fit like OEM but aren't, right?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if that cascades. Like, I think the Royal Oak is big enough that you would have cottage industry straps, probably from the absolute bargain basement, like Alibaba, AliExpress sort of stuff, all the way up. And you saw it when Casio wasn't doing the right stuff with their sort of Royal Oak adjacent design. They, you know, whether it was only a bracelet or it was only a rubber strap, people wanted metal cases because it's a modular. So you can remove most of the case and buy a metal one. So the non-OEM option is kind of an interesting play. But in my mind, this is something that goes from, you know, like very sort of specific watches, very that sort of Genta-esque thing kind of always had the integrated lug design. And it's almost less about the bracelet or the strap and more about the way that the lugs themselves are designed. And that's true for the PRX. It's true for the Odysseus. It's true for, you know, so many watches that we see in the space.
The Odysseus is an interesting case because Ion Hodinkee and several other writers on other outlets described that as an integrated bracelet watch. And, you know, several people posted howls of derision in the comments saying, how could you call it an integrated bracelet watch? Clearly, you could just take this bracelet off and you can add a strap. And, you know, it's easy to find pictures of Odysseus's...
Odyssei.
Odyssei. Of owners who've done exactly that. And then when Long & Zona released an OEM strap version of the Odysseus, the strap was actually designed in such a way as to make it look as if there was an idiosyncratic interlug width. The NATO test actually gets surprisingly close, but it's not a completely satisfactory.
Can you put a generic strap on the watch? Yes or no? If it has to be like, it's almost like if you've ever been, I don't know, my brain always goes back to car comparisons, but obviously like wheels on a car are interchangeable, but you have to have the right lug pattern, right? But then what if your car has, say, center locks? You only can have, that's the equivalent to, you know, maybe there's 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 millimeter lugs and you got to fit the right strap. Maybe you've got 3 lug or 4 lug or 5 lug patterns. But then when you get to center locks, then we're into integrated. You have to have something that's compatible with the original design of the system. It's just more specific. Or the lugs. It's almost more the lugs than the actual mount. Are so specific that it means you can't just put your favorite leather strap or your NATO or whatever on it.
All right. So does integrated bracelet really just mean a
with watch difficult lugs,
with weird ass lugs?
Maybe.
Like for, you know, for a while, like in the mid to early 2000s, like John, I'm sure you would remember this. You'd go to Basel World. Speaking of Basel World, and there would always be some new like $227,000 hyper watch, and it always, and 9 times out of 10, it had an extra center lug sticking out between the other 2 lugs.
Oh yeah,
I always hated that.
That was a popular kind of design motif for a while. That third lug.
Yeah. So is that it? Like a weird ass lug that frustrates attempts to use a non.
But it depends if they're following a pattern that others are also following, or if their design is, you know, so unique as to thwart interchangeability between some other hype watch with a third log, you know.
I wonder if you can take, I mean, they're both Richemont Group brands. I wonder if you can take an interchangeable strap from a Vacheron Overseas and kind of sort of stick it on a Cartier Santos.
I got to assume not, but looking at integrated bracelets, like they come in a bunch of varieties, but there does seem to be that thing where either the lugs are quite wide and the first link is quite narrow, or the entire channel is wide and there's 2 little narrow kind of bridge links. And either way, you can't put a NATO on it, if that ends up being the test, you know, can it NATO?
And if you've got one of those $275,000 triple lug watches, you could use 2 extremely narrow NATOs and, you know, just thread them through.
Oh yeah, that'd be a look.
Oh wow!
If you, in your words, James, if you just want to watch the world burn,
if you just want to watch the world burn, mix and match, baby, you do what you need to do. But yeah, like I think at a certain point, if you're swapping bracelets, especially out of brand, you're an agent of chaos. And I'm not saying I'm not here for you. I'm just saying you should be prepared for non-integrated results.
So basically what you're saying, James, is you can't decide if you're chaotic, good, or lawful evil.
I want to say, I'm more comfortable putting my head on the pillow at night with chaotic good, but you know, the lies we tell ourselves, right? I'm a guy that'll put a NATO on just about anything. I think the whole reason I first really got turned on to a gray NATO in the first place was a photo that Ben had posted years ago, which I think was pulled out of Time Zone, of somebody with 5960 on a NATO. And I was like, oh wait, this makes me feel something.
That was William Messina. Yeah.
I believe so. I still like that photo. It still means something to me. It's kind of in my brain as like a bit of an icon. But you know, that to a lot of people would be sacrilege. But I would say that makes a strong case that like that watch, that's not an integrated bracelet watch by any measure.
Here's one last intuition pump. What about a gold watch that has a gold bracelet that has been soldered onto the case, but the bracelet is somewhat generic in appearance?
Like some of the mesh Milanese on like the early Longa ones, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Deeply integrated.
Exactly.
Maybe you would even call that fixed. Not integrated as much as it's fixed. Can't change it.
And I think actually one of the 5960s, I think I think the Steel 5960, when that came out, also had that. It was like a kind of like a beads of rice or type of bracelet that did not come off the watch.
You know what this whole conversation reminds me of?
A really boring dinner party.
And the whole debate. It reminds me of a very famous quote by a Supreme Court justice named Potter. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Niche content. The value of the internet. On Zoom.
I'm going somewhere with this. Very low value opinion strongly expressed. Something Judge Potter Stewart said, he was trying a case. He was reviewing a case where a book had been banned because it was banned as pornography, as pornographic. And he argued that the book was not, in fact, pornographic. And his argument basically, what he said, and this is a verbatim quote, was, I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it. So maybe, and so, you know, perhaps that's the situation with integrated bracelet watches. Like, it's really, the term eludes an exact definition, but we, 9 times out of 10, we all agree on whether or not a watch is an integrated bracelet watch. And then, you know, things tend to fall apart if you try to pin the term down, but we use the term comfortably, and there's not complete consensus, but there seems to be general consensus about when it should be used, when it's meaningful to use it, and when it's not.
I think, especially after chatting it over, probably more than I ever have outside of my own internal monologue, you know, I think I would say that it seems to come down to, does the watch allow for you to fit a conventional strap, a straight edge leather, a NATO, or not? And if the answer is not, and you're either confined to the straps that they've provided you, like with an overseas, or you're forced into the murky realms of the third party fitment world, maybe you're living more of an integrated lifestyle.
I think that that's probably the closest anyone is ever going to get to, you know, a defensible, an actual real defensible definition of an integrated bracelet watch. And, you know, but there's every single possible definition I can think of, including that one, has, you know, cases that are sort of
rule breakers,
you know, exceptional, kind of outside the boundary of the definition.
Well, I think it's fun to come to some consensus, especially about such an important topic in today's life, you know, to find some common ground. Indeed, on a point, indeed. Counterpoint. It'll be interesting to see if this is what kind of comes up in the comments from the stories, or if we're saying something that's only going to make it worse. if we don't see the turn before it happens, and we're just leaning into it. But do please check out those posts.
I would say that our little conversation, you know, actually can serve as an example to the to the politicians and even the despots of the world, that it is possible for men of goodwill, individuals of goodwill, to meet over a contentious issue and achieve, if not consensus, at least a peaceable agreement to disagree.
Maybe there too, the answer is just, you know, can you NATO?
Damn.
Man. We don't need to keep that in.
No. I have to say, I wish I'd thought of that.
That is the best joke I've heard on Hoodie Radio.
I'm in the sweet spot between coffees right now.
Listen, I didn't think of it, but at least I set you up for it.
Oh, you absolutely did. No, you laid that whole table out for me. You know, the stakes couldn't really be lower on a conversation about bracelets and what they mean beyond being a bracelet. But I did have a really good time chatting with you guys. Anyone listening, if you have any feedback on questions about watches and wonders, anything maybe you think that we should be doing for the show that we should start thinking about now instead of, you know, after the show, let us know in the comments. If you want to weigh in on integrated bracelets, will it NATO, etc., let us know in the comments. We're there too. And otherwise, you know, we're going to chat to you in about a week's time, and we really appreciate you listening. Jack, John, thanks so much for being on.
It was fun.
Thanks, James.
See ya.